Mr. Pop.
I feel so welcome each time that I return, like those simpler times from not that long ago. I love those dear hearts and gentle ponies, true friends, no matter where you go.
Children, this is your number one Andalusian of the airwaves, DJ Pony. In case you weren't listening last time, I premiered a new segment that will air in this Sunday evening block whenever we have an episode. However, you'll have to forgive me if I end up rerunning it as well. At least it gives more ponies a chance to listen to it. Because you don't want to miss the next episode of Confessions of a Wasteland Pony, the new interview series where we talk to you, the everyday mares and stallions of the equestrian wasteland. Last time, we interviewed Battered Blade, the X-Raider who told her touching story of growing up in probably the worst home life you can imagine, and her harrowing tale of personal redemption. Unfortunately, a few of the residents of Ten Pony Tower weren't pleased with the fact that a former raider walked amongst them and made their complaints known after the show. Honestly, I'd be more upset, but there's just no talking to some ponies. So I'm having my assistant Homage look into possible off-site locations for use for the undesirable ponies in the future. Whose moving stories will tug at your very heartstrings in a way that fancy pants snobs just can't. But until then, buck 'em, because our next guest is a rotting talking corpse. No offense, Doctor.
It's hard to argue with the truth.
If I weren't looking at you with my own eyes, I'd say you were dead. Or a light bulb. Exactly how many of those glowing patches do you have?
Ah, you see, that is a very common misconception that the dermis is the bioluminescent organ. In fact, if you do happen to see a glowing ghoul, it is not their skin that glows, but their blood. Every artery, vein, and capillary carry the same isotopic glow of Kleidenkopf radiation.
You know, at first I didn't think you were a threat, but everything about that sentence scared me.
Ah, yes. You should be scared. Ooh, brr, ah.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Strahlung Greenshift.
It is a true joy to be here. I listen to your station at all hours of the day.
Well, we are one of the only stations that doesn't play old marching music, or even better, slaver propaganda.
Yes, the pickings are slim indeed. But the music you play brings me back to better times, when the sun still shined and the Equestria was in a true golden age.
Careful now, you're going to show your own age if you remember that far back. Just how old are you?
You know, somewhere I lost track around 250.
That's amazing. You're probably one of the oldest ponies in the world now. I'm pretty sure that means that we can all refer to you as Grandpa.
Oh, I take that as a compliment. I love children.
You do seem like the fatherly type. Do you have any of your own?
Oh, no. I was married to my job, so to speak. However, I had more nieces and nephews than I could carry. I was from a big family, you see. Lots of brothers and sisters. It was quite common where I grew up.
You come from Dusselhoof, if I still know my accents.
Ah, yes I do. Beautiful countryside on the eastern slopes of the Royal Mountains. Despite mostly knowing the common tongue, we never did lose our pre-equestrian manner of speech. What is the present if it fails to stand sturdily on the foundations of the past?
Well, chaos is the first word I'd choose, but luckily we have your 2.5 centuries of experience to help us out. First off, what are you a doctor of?
Ah. I am educated and experienced in biology and diagnostic medicine.
Educated? So you have a degree, and don't just call yourself a doctor because you've been sawing off limbs for years and seem to be good at it?
Well, Why not both? But yes, after receiving my degree, I worked for 25 years at the hospital there in Düsselhof.
25 years? So you already had a decently long life even before the bombs fell.
Yes, I did. In fact, I opted to return to my alma mater when I retired to teach while pursuing my own research projects.
And this is all while the Great War is going on?
Yes, it was. The new ministries were formed about 2 years into my retirement. You must understand, though, that the ponies of Düsselhof were always having a tendency for isolation. We didn't pay the war much mind at all. We went about our lives, read the occasional sad headline, tisked ourselves, and moved on. In retrospect, I see how foolish it was to think that we were somehow saved or apart from the motherland just because we had maintained our individual identity. It wasn't until the Stapletech pony arrived that things began to impact us.
What do you mean?
One of their corporate representatives, a brown earth pony mare with magenta mane and fierce, determined green eyes. She met with our city council one day to discuss the construction of a stable. The council ponies were hesitant at first, especially with her New Yorker charisma and force of will. But soon she was able to convince them that without a stable, there was a chance our entire culture could be lost to history in a single flash.
Well, I guess nothing sells a product like, buy this or you're all gonna die.
Oh, but it worked. The council then decided that the place to focus its preservation efforts on should be the university. They figured that it was the best way to preserve our heritage. And I swear, it wasn't a week later that construction materials began flowing in by the train car load. The foundation was excavated opposite the main hall of Blackwood University, within the view of my office window. I saw the entirety of the project first hoof. In a mere 4 months, they were planting the sod grass and bringing the last of the materials through the door.
They built the entire thing in only 4 months? Even with prefabricated materials, that's quite a feat.
Well, Stapletech was one of the largest companies in the world. They definitely had the resources, even to make it up the mountains to a little village. Soon, Stable 76 was complete. And then they began selling the space for those who wished to purchase themselves the ultimate insurance policy.
Did you purchase one?
Oh, heavens no. I was an aging stallion. I had lived a long and fulfilling life. Those spaces were for the young who still had a life to live.
That's a noble perspective.
It was the right thing to do, I thought. But then, to my surprise, I received a letter anyway.
You're kidding.
No. They wanted me to be a part of the stable's medical team because of my years of learning and experience. It was a reasonable argument. But not when considering the younger and brighter wunderkinds that filled the Blackwood halls. I went to their local office to talk to the New Yorker mayor about it.
But once again she had the stronger will?
Indeed. She convinced me that as the most senior member of the medical research staff, my knowledge and skills would be invaluable to continue teaching the future generations. I remember commenting snarkily that I'd probably drop dead from a heart attack before I could make it through the door. But I walked out of her office with a badge and a retainer check. I was now an employee of the Stapletech Corporation.
So were they hiring other members of the university?
Oh, yes, a great deal. Our overmayor, in fact, was a political science professor. That's, in a way, where things started to go wrong.
How do you mean?
Well, this mayor, she was a sweet girl. Tulip Blossom. Tulip Blossom, her name was. She went to work straight out of graduate school and into teaching as a professor. This was all well and good, being able to hold interesting philosophical discussions about Düsselhof's history both before and after the Christian expansion. All of her knowledge was in books, scrolls, papers, documents. She had never served as an ambassador. She had never seen nor studied abroad to see the world as it truly was. She could talk about and about the Zebra Kaiser, and how the policies of the two nations had become completely incompatible. But just like the rest of us, she was too far detached from the horrors of the war. On the days the sirens began to ring, I found her in the hallway, visibly shaken as she glanced around the corridors as everyone galloped around her. If I had not thrown her on my back, I think she would not have left that spot.
You saved her life.
It is a doctor's duty.
So she clearly wasn't prepared for this kind of responsibility. How did she end up as your overmare?
The unfortunate result of two very different groups of ponies agreeing on something. The council only agreed to the stable project if they could have the final stay on the ponies that would staff it, to preserve our culture and traditions and blah blah blah. So of course they thought that Tulip, who was literally a living encyclopedia of Dusselhoof for the past 2,000 years, should hold the highest political office. They paid no mind to choose someone with actual leadership qualities to lead the small group of ponies in a closed space environment after most of their families and friends had been consumed in magical fire. The poor girl. No amount of enthusiasm could have prepared her for the task. She reminded me a lot of the Ministry of Peace, Mayor. She was naive, believed too strongly in the goodness of ponies. When she heard the sirens and seen the impacts in the distance, something snapped.
What do you mean, snapped?
Once we were inside, when the stable door was closed, Tulip just sat there in the entrance corridor, staring at it. I tried talking to her. We all did. But she really didn't say much of anything after that. She would sit there all hours of the day until someone pulled her away to feed her or take her to bed.
The reality of the war was too much for some to handle. How did the others in Stable 76 react?
Things were actually okay for a while. Everyone knew about Tulip's state of mind, of course, but each of us individual section leaders were able to keep everything functioning and under control for the moment. We ran the stable as a council, just like we had in the world before. But then something much worse happened.
TJ, do you know about how the stables are organized?
Well, I've seen the layouts for a few of them.
Well, Stable 76 was quite unique. It was outfitted with a so-called Clipper Magical Energy Generator, which stood for Crystalline Liquid Inertial Propulsion Reactor. Many stables were being outfitted with similar units, but we were told that Stable 76 was constructed around the largest one they'd ever produced. It was about 4 times larger, with 100 times the amount of fuel. The Splendid Valley facility sent enough barrels of the liquid crystal to satisfy even a Dragon King. At least, that's how the engineers described it to me. They were told that it would power us for thousands of years, and said it could have untold usefulness for rebuilding civilization in the new world.
I don't like where this is going.
You don't have to be as bright as me to figure that out. One day, about 3 months after Doomsday, we all heard a loud boom echo through the hallways. We immediately scrambled to see what was going on. That is when we got a call from our chief engineer that one of the shielding manifolds had undergone critical decompression, which is scientific speak for the top of one of the damn fuel tanks exploded. I could hear the loud, fast-paced clicking on the red counter from over the intercom. He said that one of the bugs had already died, and he was sealing off the level.
By the goddesses.
We didn't know what to do. His team was doing all they could to contain the leak. But we couldn't just sit around. We searched through all of the files and procedure manuals we could, but couldn't find anything useful that the engineers weren't already trying. Until we saw the list of the mainframe's administrative permissions. Near the bottom of the list was the communication line for StableTech's Central Installation Command. It was the main operation center for all the stables. They were there to provide everything from technical support to a master spell matrix to emergency situation assistance.
and clearly critical reactor failure qualified.
But the problem was, only the Overmayor could establish the communications.
Why hadn't you just replaced Tulip with someone else?
We couldn't. While the system was built to transfer control in event of unforeseen death of the Overmayor, that didn't include the initial login for the first Overmayor,
the one hardwired in by StableTech,
must activate the system herself. They said it had something to do with preventing sabotage or some such horseshit. So the damned apocalypse was a pretty high-risk situation. They reasoned that if the Overmayor was dead, probably the rest of us were too. We even had to hold Tulip's hoof up to control the panel just to get the damn door to close. Unfortunately, we couldn't just do that again here, because we also needed her password.
So your only hope for help was to snap her out of her trance?
Yes, which we've already been doing. Our lead psychiatrist, Dr. Copper, had done everything known to medical science. Her obvious fixation was with what was behind that damned door. Very early on, we told her that if she came with us and logged into the computer, we could open the door to see. Which we couldn't have let her do, of course. We originally just planned to get her to put in the password, and then we would elect the new Overmayor from there. But now, taking our chances on the surface was a much more viable option. Tulip, she cried. There's been an accident. You need to access the mainframe. They're going to die down there. Dr. Copper even gave her a few hard slaps, but still no response.
What do you mean, no response? Not even pain? You said she'd return there if you took her away. So she must have had some faculty about her.
She would fall asleep there if we did nothing. But we just couldn't break through to her. If you looked into her eyes, you would have understood. They were filled with the same horror and fear that I had seen in her in the hallway on that final day. She was still seeing the explosions, the death, the destruction. It was like a waking nightmare.
How awful, to be trapped in your own mind like that. So even though she survived the bombs physically unscathed, they'd consumed her mind beyond repair.
It was no use. Everything we did failed. I even tried using different drugs on her, but nothing worked. Then, we started hearing screaming from over the intercoms, and just like that, the whole stable went into full panic. A few of them had started to turn on Tulip, looking for something they could lash out their fear and anger on. They were so close to becoming a mob, but I couldn't let that happen to her. She had been through enough. We all lied and said that Tulip couldn't do anything anyway, because the reactor failure had shut down the power to the door and sections of the mainframe.
Hold on, you had to lie about that? Part of your reactor had exploded, but you weren't experiencing any power issues?
Strangely, no. Everything was running just like it should. We didn't even know what had caused the damage in the first place. Days had passed since we had tried the intercom. The screaming had stopped, but now, it was just silence. As far as we knew, the area was flooded with radiation and all of them are dead. Unfortunately, only one of that was true. About a week after the silence, we were making plans for long-term function when the speaker came to life again.
Hello? Is anyone still there?
The stallion said.
Please, I'm still alive. Someone help me. There are others too.
Suddenly, they had to make a decision.
Did you think you could save them?
They were still in a highly irradiated environment, so even if we got them out, we needed to be able to clean them off before we could treat them or bring them near any of the others. Even opening one entrance to the level was highly risky, but we had to try. We could not just simply leave them to their deaths if there was still a chance. Plus, admittedly, I was already very curious that any of them were still alive. The doses they were exposed to should have killed them in a matter of hours, at the points when, well, they'd heard the screaming.
So what was the plan?
We decided to use the maintenance stairwell. It had decontamination rooms connecting to the reactor space. Now that the reactor's hazard sirens had been deactivated, we could still use that antechamber to pass into and out of the level without violating the radiological seal. We could bring a few survivors through there, where they'd be cleaned on the outside and rush them to the medical lab. Myself and two of the medical ponies suited up in full magical radiation suits. We planned on getting all of the survivors out into the stairwell as quickly as possible before resealing the area. We descended down into the reactor level, making sure all of the pneumatic doors in the shaft were sealed. When we opened the bottom door, we saw the stallion leaning against the wall where the intercom was. He turned with eyes full of gratefulness and relief. On the far wall behind him was a bright and radiant glow of the reactor. The main ignition chamber stood nearly 3 stories tall, as large as a grain silo. The pulsing cylinder mechanism inside of it thumped like a beating heart. Several of the fuel tanks stood behind it, one of which was nearly empty with a gaping hole in the pumping assembly above it.
Did you see anything wrong with it? Could you tell what had caused the rupture?
Sadly, I had no idea. The glowing liquid covered most of the floor below the reactor and had filled the whole space with a sick haze. The bodies of the dead were strewn across the wall farthest from the reactor, some of them thrown by the explosion. Many more were slouched against the doors trying to get out. On the command platform lie the lifeless body of the chief engineer, his hoof still on the emergency switch. Then, we saw the other survivors the Stallion had mentioned. There were 5 of them, standing dumbfounded in a huddle in one corner off to the side. Everything seemed stable enough, so we went inside. But as soon as we walked through the door, the emergency alarm above the door started sounding, and it quickly slid shut. Bright yellow lights began spinning around the base of the reactor as the noxious machine began pulsing erratically out of rhythm.
It began failing again the moment you went down there?
An unusual coincidence, isn't it? The ponies in the corner all immediately turned to face us. Most of their hair was gone, coat, mane, and tail. The flesh was bubbly and burnt, as if they had taken a shower in boiling acid. For a moment, we looked at each other, but behind their eyes was a hollowness, an emptiness. There were no souls left inside, nothing above the most baser instincts driving them. We were realizing with every passing second what was about to happen. We were frozen beneath the door's siren, as they were creeping ever so closer towards us. It wasn't until one of them sniffed the air and started to growl that one of my nurses started screaming and galloped towards the control box stairwell. The stallion from the intercom seemed just as scared and surprised.
Surprised? Like they hadn't acted that way before the three of you showed up?
Precisely. I think that before they caught our scent, they had just trotted aimlessly around the room since the incident. The stallion that called us, who had regained full mental function, was likely in a short coma for that week. He began running away with the nurse as I ascended off the chief's platform. My assistant and I tried to follow, but the three of the ghouls had already cut us off and were closing in fast. Before I could act, he darted towards the group and tackled them to the side. He yelled as the 4 of them collided against the wall. "Protect the others!" I looked up and saw that the other 2 ghouls were chasing the nurse and the stallion up the stairs. I galloped as fast as I could up after them. They both reached the control room box immediately and started pounding on the door in a frenzy.
"Unseal the room! You have to let us out now!"
They were panicked and scared beyond all reason, shoving aside the body of the chief engineer and undoing all the lockdowns from the engineering side. "No," I cried. But it was too late.
Oh no.
One of the other section chiefs unsealed the level with an administrative override, not realizing what he'd done. Just like with the Great War, it only took a few moments for everything to fall to pieces. You see, the rupture of the fuel tank and the decaying of the liquid crystal released not only a great deal of radiation, but pressure as well. The entire space, which had been under a full quarantine seal, had been building an internal pressure which had reached nearly 5 atmospheres. When the others undid those seals, they added the reactor chamber back to the stable's ventilation system. What followed was a roar, as if a group of Pegasi had started a hurricane in the room. The compressed radioactive atmosphere forced its way through the air ducts, bursting through the vent covers and flooding the entire stable in the horrible green haze.
And just like that, everything was contaminated?
Everything. Over the course of the week, enough of the crystal had atomized that the air was thick with the particulate. Once again, we had heard the screaming, but this time it was coming from the upper levels as the entire population of Stable 76 was covered in the radioactive mist.
But a few of you were safe. You still had on the full magical radiation suit, as did your assistants.
They did, but that didn't matter for long. After the distraction of the decompression, I looked down to see that my stallion assistant had been torn to pieces by the group of ghouls he had tackled. They bit and tore at him until he wasn't much more than a pile of tissue.
I'm so sorry. No one should have to experience nor witness such a death.
The poor soul. I turned away from the horrible sight to find that the other two ghouls had continued their chase of the stallion who nursed through the command box entryway. I continued up the staircase to follow them. But then while I was galloping on the catwalk to the other side of the room, I heard a loud metal lurching. I turned to my right and watched as the second fuel tank exploded. A large chunk of the shrapnel collided with the section of Vogelvay I was on, ripping it from the walls and landing on me in a heap 30 feet below. I had never felt so much pain in my life. I'd wished I had passed out or died instantly. The smaller glass shards tore my radiation suit to pieces while I was soaked in the liquid crystal that covered the wrecked reactor piping. The sensation in my skin burned so deep, it felt like hot metal rods were being driven into my bones. I quickly scrambled to crawl out from below the wreckage. When I got free of the large chunks, I fell to my knees, due to the fact that two of my legs were broken, along with several ribs and vertebrae. I collapsed on the cold concrete ground, unable to move any longer. The last thing that I saw was a pulsing glow of the reactor, and the fuel from the second tank flowing towards me.
By the goddesses! I'm pretty sure that is the most incredible story anyone has ever told me about their own death. But somehow, not the first.
Well, you know, I never really thought of it like that before. Thank goodness. Luckily, that was more pain than I've ever had to experience again. I guess I ended up paying it forward, so to speak.
Really? You don't feel pain anymore?
It's not that I don't feel it. It just doesn't hurt. I could stab myself straight through my leg here, and it wouldn't feel like much more than getting poked with a pen. I would demonstrate, but you'll already have enough work decontaminating the room already.
It's nothing a little Abraxo soap and Rataway can't fix. And speaking of Rataway...
That is a very good idea. My radiant personality does tend to average between 1 to 3 rads per second.
Yuck. I'll never get used to that bitter orange aftertaste. Now, where were we? Oh yeah, you had just died.
In a way, I did indeed. When I finally opened my eyes, everything in front of me was a glowing yellowish green. several ripples and shimmers dancing around me. I remember thinking to myself, why does the afterlife look like unicorn piss? But then I moved my head as my faculties returned to me and realized I was lying several inches in the liquid crystal. My nose was just barely below the surface like a submersible's periscope. Remembering the danger, I immediately sat up on my haunches and looked around, spitting out as much of the crystal as I could. Then I leapt back when I looked up and saw the three ghouls staring straight back at me. "Stay back," I cried, stretching my leg out in front of me to fence them off. "Stay back!" But while they gazed nonchalantly in my direction, I became transfixed by the white beach bone that was now my hoof. I slowly began to turn my leg, tearing away the shredded radiation suit. But what I found beneath was a fleshy, bubbling mass of gray and green. Some sections of skin were completely missing, mainly in spots where the glass shards had cut me open. Instead, I could see my muscle tendons as they constricted and tensed. A thin, filmy layer had formed over the tissue, like a fleshy window to look at my now green, glowing insides. Most of my coat hair was gone, too. I once had lush, cobalt blue hair, but what little remained was ghostly white and shriveled down to peach fuzz. Luckily, some of my mane and tail hairs remained, although they were much whiter and thinner than before. At least at this point, it helped me look like my age.
Oh, nonsense, Dr. Greenshift. I wouldn't peg you a day over 200.
Oh, you're too kind. Perhaps my modeling career isn't over just yet. There's nothing sexier than a zombie fashion show.
I actually like the idea. We can call it Wasteland Chic, set up a runway in the Ten Pony Lobby and have a big-ass party. Honestly, I think a lot of ponies out there could use a night to just cut loose. And glowing models means we don't even need to set up stage lights. So now that you've woken up, found that you've undergone this shocking transformation, and are facing three ferals that just killed your assistant, what was your next step?
It was literally a step. I stood on all fours and took a few steps back, which is when I heard an audible popping around my hind legs. I gently kept walking around on them, and was happy when they didn't give out from under me. The bones had set themselves and already healed. I could already tell because I could see them through the spots on my leg where they had previously been protruding through.
You see? It's right here, right there by the flexor tendon.
Yes, I can see it, Doctor, but it doesn't really make for good radio.
Well, you have a good point. The ferals continued standing there in a loose formation as I walked away from them. At this point, the entire reactor space was flooded in nearly a foot of the liquid crystal. Instead of the painful burning sensation, the crystal just felt like muddy water. Since several of the catwalks were now piles of wreckage on the concrete floor, the door inside the command box was unreachable. So, I had to find a different way out. In one corner behind the section breakers was an industrial lift for moving equipment. The reactor continued pumping in its normal rhythm, and the electrical arcs above the breakers was proof enough that the power was still flowing properly. That is, despite the two empty fuel tanks which sat quietly amongst their neighbors. With a push of a button, I took the lift as high as it would go. I exited to find a collection of water tanks in front of me. The reassuring blue paint and shorter, less intimidating size was a welcome change to where I once was. I followed them along the hallway until I came across an open pneumatic door. On the other side was the stable's apple orchard, or rather, what was left of it. The once vibrant green trees and juicy red apples for now shriveled and black. But not black like the blackwood trees native to Dusselhof. The orchard was scorched earth, dust and ashes. I crossed the orchard for the exit and found several more ferals just standing about. The mist was very thick, so their immovable stance cast them like shadows with the trees, mere reflections of their former selves. The corridors eventually led me to the atrium. As the main meeting and recreation hall, there were always plenty of ponies in there at any given time. This was still true of the couple dozen ferals blocking my path to the exit. At this point, I still knew practically nothing about what these creatures had become, and did not want to antagonize them at all.
So even though those first ghouls hadn't attacked you, you still tread carefully around these ghouls.
They might not have been initially hostile, but I still feared bumping into one of them or some other provocations that would cause them to attack regardless, which is still quite a common occurrence. But I couldn't get to any of the higher levels without passing through any of the atrium, so I took a breath and slowly started walking. This is where I took some time to really observe the way that they behaved. In most cases, I found them huddled in groups of 3 to 5, almost like a familial herd instinct. While the occasional feral ghoul would stand alone, in general, they seemed to prefer bunching together, although they appeared to have no communication or interaction with another at all. I kept moving slowly between their smaller groupings and making sure none of them were paying attention to me. This is when I stumbled upon something and had to stop. I looked down and found a small filly trotting away from me. My heart broke for the poor little thing as she walked off. Not only did she not have her mark, but the skin where it should have been had rotted away to the bone. That was the mark she bore. The mark of the ghoul.
And she wasn't the only one, was she?
Oh no. Several other folds were scattered around, all with the same empty looks as the adults. By the time I left the atrium, I felt as dead on the inside as I looked on the outside, which is when I saw one more heart-breaking sight. Sitting there in front of the stable door, I saw Tulip. On either side of the door, the two large vents, pumping in the green mist.
Oh, goddesses.
I trotted slowly up to her as she sat staring at the door as she always had. As I walked beside her, the glowing muscle between her exposed ribs and vertebrae became more evident. Oh, Tulip, I said, sitting down next to her. Skarlung? I immediately turned to her as her eyes drifted away from the door and met mine. She had not spoken in nearly 4 months. Skarlung? She lifted her hooves up to me, revealing that they were almost as decayed and glowing as mine. Her face began to wince as if she was crying, but no tears came out. I took her in my arms as she slowly sobbed into my lab coat. The bombs, Skarlung. The bombs.
Shh. I know, Tulip, I know. But it's okay now, we're alive. I don't know how or why, but we are alive. Just hearing the sound of her voice, despite what we'd become, I'd really believed it.
That's incredible. The ghoul transformation snapped her out of it? Talk about unconventional medicine. It's rare that we hear of the wasteland actually doing good for some pony, no matter how small that fortune would be. And not only that, but you weren't the only one to have not turned feral.
Indeed, we weren't alone either. While we sat there, a small group of ponies walked into the room.
Dr. Greenshift, is that you? We thought you died in the second explosion.
So did I, I said. Is there anyone else? Not many, about 2 dozen. They gathered in the Overmare's office. As she said that,
She looked down at Tulip and was shocked to find her looking back.
Hello, Dr. Copper, Tulip said.
Once I picked Sir Joseph off the ground, I do mean that figuratively, not literally.
Well, that saves me the trouble of asking.
We met up with the others, and I found that I had been passed out for nearly a week. The transformations had happened fairly quickly, a matter of hours. Most of them had passed out from the pain for some period of time. The only difference was if they were still ponies when they woke up, if they woke up at all. The other survivors led Tulip and I down to one of the large storage rooms on the third level. On my way up from the reactor room, I passed about 75 feral ghouls before meeting up with the roughly 24 survivors who had maintained their intelligence. Stable 76 had a population of 1,000 ponies. The storeroom is where the rest of them were. The room had become a sort of mass crypt. Most of them didn't make it at all, Dr. Copper said. They were beginning to decompose, and we didn't know what else to do. They've only covered a few levels so far, hallways and such. Most of them are in their rooms. We thought of the orchard at first, but there isn't enough time. Tulip turned away and buried her face into my shoulder. It's not ideal, I said, but it's the right thing. Let's go get the others. It took a few more days, but we did our best to lay them with their families, taking with us any pictures or meaningful items we found near them as well. This is how I discovered the fate of both the nurse and the stallion we had gone down to save. Once we were done, we sealed the space and marked it with the memorial plaque.
Dr. Greenshift, I must say, as powerful as your story is, and despite everything that you went through, to think that the first reaction all of you had was to give the dead a proper resting place is truly moving. If more ponies treated the living with that modicum of respect and dignity, the wasteland would be a much better place.
Thank you, truly. Your words bring a light to my heart, more than usual.
So, things could only get better from there, right? Now that Tulip was functioning again, she could log into the system as Overmare, and you could finally get out of the stable.
That is what we thought as well. But when she sat down at her desk for the first time and put in the password, the only response was an error message.
You've got to be kidding.
She tried it several more times, with every password she could think of, but they all failed.
How could that be?
Well, although Tulip was slowly returning to normal as possible for any of us anyway, she had no recollection of anything that happened since the bombs began dropping. She said that the last thing she remembered was me throwing her on my back and running off with her.
Is it uncouth to say that that sounds a little romantic?
Not at all. But as far as we know, we were hit by the explosion, and when we woke up, we were zombies. Entering the stable, closing the doors, the reactor explosions, all of that was gone. According to Dr. Copper, now our only remaining psychiatrist, Tulip's mind was lost in a recursive delusional state. When she saw the explosions, the immense fear locked her into a state of waiting for the shockwave to hit her. Being blasted by the radioactive mist from the ventilation system must have finally resolved the loop in her psyche, which is why she finally awoke when I spoke to her.
So, did she eventually remember the password?
No, she didn't. Dr. Copper thought that because it had to do with the war, it could have been lost to the mental episode as well. But, she pointed out, compared to most of our shambling neighbors, Tulip should count herself lucky.
So you were all trapped in the stable for the foreseeable future?
Yes. However, it didn't take long for us to realize the benefits of being recently deceased. Perhaps I should speak more scientifically.
Please do.
We had a long time to observe not only each other, but the mindless pharaohs as well. I'm a biologist and a diagnostician at heart, and no, I had nothing but time on my hooves. We were observing the advent of effectively a new species, and they... we needed to be properly studied and described. The first findings came with some very simple tests. I discovered that ghouls don't really need to eat or drink water. Our bodies can process the food, better than normal ponies or countless other creatures, but it doesn't appear to be necessary for normal metabolic function.
Well, that sounds great for saving caps anyway.
Yes, indeed. Not to mention we wouldn't get much pleasure out of anyway. You see, ghouls can't really taste. Not that our tongues are useless, eh, but especially for the chatty types like me who can talk on and on about anything for hours on end. But we really only have binary flavor detection, radioactive and non-radioactive.
You taste radiation? What's that like?
Well, you know you mentioned the bitter taste of the radiofay. Think of that as half as bitter, but with a powerful lemon-lime flavor.
Really? Lemon-lime? Huh.
It tastes like lemon-lime to me, anyhow. Tulip says it tastes more like raspberries. It could be different for any pony. From all of those I've asked, it seems to be tied to a fruit of some kind that he or she enjoyed before the ghoulification. Not really something I'm studying heavily, but an interesting tidbit, to say the least.
Definitely. Kind of makes me want a laser lemon sparkle cola now. Homage, do we have any of those? They were a sponsor back in the day. Anyway.
Oh, I miss sparkle cola too. Having a variety of flavors anyway. The problem of having one taste is that you get bored of it rather quickly. And speaking of bored, the next thing that the rest of us started to realize is that we no longer needed to sleep. If we could shut our eyes and slip into some sort of form of unconsciousness. But like with eating, it seemed essentially irrelevant, simply remaining as a vestigial trait. To put it to the test, I once spent an entire month without sleeping. There's no change in energy, critical thinking, or mood in any way.
That sounds like it could be maddening.
Oh, yes, it was. I think I've read every book in that table that wasn't burned beyond recognition. Thank goodness I didn't need glasses.
Would glasses still have been an issue? Your body went as far as repairing your own broken legs within a week. Is ghoul regeneration really that specific?
It's inconsistent. Like I mentioned before with the disparity of how we all taste radiation, some bodily functions seem to regenerate while others don't. Take our appearance, for example. For whatever reason, in most cases of ghoulism, the dermal layers are not regenerated to their regular state. Normal ghouls. Then there are those ghouls that were affected by the big cloud. For some other reason, they seem to maintain their outward appearance 4 times as much as with the normal ghouls. But they are a subspecies that I have very little interaction with at this point. This is also the mystery behind why some of the ghouls get the awful rasp of their voice, while some of us retain our vocal cords, for the most part.
So you don't need to sleep, eat, drink water, or require any kind of medication? So, what keeps you walking?
All of my observation point me to the same conclusion, which most Wastelanders already assume. We survive off radiation. Ghoulism appears to be caused by an accelerated systemic mutation in the cells of the subject. When a normal pony is hit with a massive burst of radiation, in roughly 10% of the cases, the pony's cellular and genetic structure undergo a forced evolution to adapt itself to a new radioactive environment. It's unfortunate that only a quarter of those ponies maintain their intelligence, and unfortunately farther, may degrade into a feral ghoul over time.
And sadly, this is what has caused so much bias against ghouls over the years. Is there any way to predict if and when that mental decay may happen?
That is the focal point of my studies.
why one ghoul walks and talks while the other shambles about. My findings have shown that those who have retained their sentience tended to have a higher IQ than those who didn't. So, ironically, the ghouls who aren't feral are usually quite brilliant. Their brains had more folds or more neural pathways, which either allowed for higher natural resistance to the degradation or prioritized intelligence in some way to be regenerated and maintained above the simple animalistic survival instincts. It is those instincts which are also fundamentally rewritten during the transformation. This is demonstrated by our taste for variation. Since that is now the sole source of survival in our species, all innate processes are adjusted to the search for it. This is why feral ghouls are so violent and quick to attack normal ponies or other creatures, while living with a significantly higher level of background radiation than before the bombs fell, have a much lower internal supply of it, or the need to survive off of it for that matter. So feral ghouls essentially see all of their creatures as competition for food. Think of it as a pack of lions finding hyenas on the land. The hyenas are consuming other creatures in the same way as non-ghouls soak up radiation that would otherwise win food for the ferals. Add that to the fact that they've already gone through a traumatizing genetic shift, and you get creatures that are so fiercely defensive of their radiation supplies that they kill off and tear to pieces any biological competition.
That is quite horrifying, but it does seem to make sense. So there are no outward signs of the mental degradation?
Oh no. There are very obvious telltale signs. It took a few more years of observing and knowing more sentient ghouls, but it explained a lot of what we experience in the stable. When a ghoul's brain decays to a feral state, they will begin screaming non-stop for upwards of several hours as all of their higher brain functions begin to die. And if that horrifying alarm isn't enough, they can pass into a coma that can last as long as a month before waking up as a feral. One of the leading causes of this degradation is usually because that pony has very few friends or purposes in life. Talking to others, maintaining friendships and relationships, having drives, purposes, ambitions, reasons to get up in the morning. These are things that stimulate the mind and keep it alive and healthy. Most cases of degradation happen in either outsiders or loners who travel by themselves. Without need to maintain those higher brain functions, the body eventually decides that they are unnecessary and kills them off to keep them from using up valuable radiation. The best way to keep ghouls from turning is by forging long-lasting relationships with them.
Now that's a rule we can all live by. To think that they only want to soak up radiation sounds like a heck of a deal to me. They can take all the radiation we have lying around and just eat it somewhere else. If only they could reason, we could work this out with good old-fashioned diplomacy. Maybe then they'd stop taking bites out of our good-natured travelers.
Even for sentient ghouls like myself, radiation is a major psychological driver. Interestingly enough, feral and non-feral ghouls alike tend to follow, and in some cases obey, glowing ghouls like myself, almost like a pack alpha. Heck, a glowing one could probably start a religion and get a pack of followers to obey him unquestioningly.
Now that would be quite the story to report on. But it brings up another point. Why do some ghouls like you glow?
Well, it's actually as simple as having a much higher concentration of radiation in our bodies than other ghouls. The exact amount of REMs varies based on the size of the ghoul, but any of us could become a glowing one simply by sitting in a high radiation concentration for a while. I've never not glowed as a ghoul because I've soaked up so many rads over the years that I'd probably have to explode twice to get rid of it all.
Don't go giving anyone ideas.
Good point.
So is that battery life affected by a unicorn's magical capabilities?
Well, I'm not sure as of yet what levels the magical aspect plays into this transformation. Dusselhoof was predominantly an Earth pony settlement, but I have found no statistical difference in rates of transformation into ghouls between unicorns and Earth ponies.
I wish I had more information on the Pegasi, but to this day I've only met one ghoul Pegasi from the Absolutely Everything store.
Isn't she such a sweetheart? She sure has done her part in the grand scheme of things. Her Wasteland Survival Guide is such a useful piece of literature. It's a true testament to her own research.
Oh, she is indeed such a wonderful mare. You should have seen the look on my face when she took to the sky. I couldn't believe those wings could even carry her, but she flew off at such an impressive speed. She's made several trips to Dusselhof to deliver supplies and all sorts of things to our community. She knows she is welcome there at any time if she wants to ever find a new place to call home. However, the mare is stubborn and loves helping the other ponies of the wasteland too much, so we try to visit as often as we can.
That's right. You're not taking her from us that easily. So, obviously, because I have you in my studio today, you did eventually get out of Stable 76.
We did, indeed. But we were beyond surprised when the door actually opened. It was decades for us. We were only 27 in total, along with our 78 less talkative neighbors. We slowly herded them all into a different one of the large storage rooms. It was so much simpler to just keep them locked up for our safety, as well as theirs. So, we had quite a bit of space to ourselves. We played a lot of hoofball over the years. We've all read many of the books, listened to all the old music, the radio plays and the like. The occasional motion picture, too, the few we had. Heck, most of us ended up writing a few books ourselves. We had nothing but time at our disposal. But, as the years drifted on, and we had our various conflicts, we only needed to hear the moans of our brothers and sisters, or look at the memorial plaque to quickly put our differences to rest. We were by ourselves in this world, left to spend an eternity together. The bonds we forged were unlike any other we knew from our past, and all 27 of us still live there to this day. The day the door opened started like all the others. It was life as we had come to know. In most cases, we'd lived over twice as long as ghouls than we had in our previous lives. As much as we tried to keep the spirit of past friends and ancestors alive, the memories faded and had grown foggy over time. But on that day, it all changed at high noon. We all heard a loud rumble as the machinery in the room roared to life. The large servo mechanism descended from the ceiling, and with a loud blast of steam and metal screeching, it pulled the great cork door from the wall and rolled away with a final boom.
That's it? It just rolled away on its own? No one interacted with it or touched a control panel?
Exactly. Fearful of what we would find on the other side, a few of us larger bucks approached the entrance with weapons in hand. But as we followed the tunnel to the surface, we saw no one. As we opened the secondary metal door, we gazed upon the surface for the first time in a century. What was once Blackwood University was nothing but bricks and wreckage around us. Not far away, between the university and the Grand Council building, was a large crater, 30 feet deep and 200 feet across. Most of the buildings around it had been leveled to their very foundations. We looked for the sun above us, but saw only the dark layer of the clouds. Aside from the clouds themselves, Dusselhof was cast in the shadow of the mountain. The brightest source of light was in the crater itself, which glowed brighter than even the stable reactor. There were also glowing mushrooms of some kind, which had mutated from the radiation as well. Dusselhof had gotten a lot of rainfall, leading the fungus to sprout up all over the town. It was the closest thing we had to glass.
And Dusselhof used to be very lush, covered in fields of beautiful flowers.
In so many beautiful colors, too. There wasn't much left, but it was still home, and so we worked to rebuild it as best we could.
So, did you ever find out what caused the door to open?
That is indeed the greatest question of them all.
We might have gone on not knowing, too, thinking the door's opening was part of a system default programming. And it was, too, but not for those reasons alone. Some days, after the opening of the door, Tulip and I happened to both be in the Overmayor's office. Tulip still used the attached living quarters in the office for everyday tasks, logging in as a normal administrator like the rest of us. But she turned on the terminal screen when she found a single notification. Final log transmitted. Experiment 76 complete. Select here to establish Overmayor. Those few simple words confirmed the deepest suspicions V had harbored. It should have hit me the moment I looked at the calendar. The stable door opened exactly 100 years after the bombs fell to the day. Tulip's password hadn't worked, not because she had forgotten it, but because she was never intended to use it in the first place. Stable 76 was a long-term biological and sociological experiment to see the effects of heavy radiation on a population over time.
Oh, goddesses.
The thought had crossed our minds, of course. In extreme situations, you must confront every possibility. But perhaps naively, we had cast those thoughts aside, further pacified by the ultimately unrelated occurrence of Tulip's psychological breakdown. The first fuel tank erupted exactly 100 days after the door had closed. The second fuel tank was meant to erupt either when someone enters the reactor space or undid the quarantine seal. We were destined to be blasted with the green mist either way. As time ran its course, StableTech's cameras witnessed every part of their sick game. I don't even know if anyone was still watching by the end. For all I know, the data of all the death and tragedy wrought upon us is sitting silently in a server bank.
What an absolute horror you all had to go through. But it's comforting to know that in the end, you went through it together. You see, Ponies of the Wasteland, one thing you must remember beyond all else is why we are here in the first place. Equestria did not fall to some cataclysm of nature. Someone pulled the trigger. The taint and rot of the wasteland is only outward evidence of the sins of our past, the decay of the souls from that time. Never forget that the road to Tartarus is paved with good intentions. So despite reason or circumstance, we live in a dead world, and no amount of research or experimentation is going to remedy the situation. It is ponies like the survivors of Dusselhoof, the survivors of Stable 76, and the richness of their character that will move us forward. We can only shape the world for the better by being made of stronger stuff than our ancestors were. Am I forgetting anything, Doctor?
I think that covers everything. Despite what we have gone through, we intend to put this sable back into good use. In the century and a half since, we have built Dusselhoof up as a ghoul colony. The radiation levels are so high that very few creatures can come within 10 miles of the epicenter. Besides the radiological barrier, there are only a few train tracks and mountain passes that can even reach us. It is a natural safe haven for our kind. Ghouls face so much discrimination that they often have no place to go. So, we invite all that we can to come find shelter here. Do not stay alone and live in the fear of others. Come with us in Dusselhoof and find a community here, a place where we're all the same, and you've got more than enough radiation to last for thousands of years. We have built out the technologies from the stable and have a thriving town on the surface. The Klepa generator, true to one of its promises, has been an endless wellspring of power. In fact, we were overjoyed when we got our old radio mast working again and heard your transmission come over the airwaves.
Oh, come now. You're going to make me blush.
And that was 130 years ago. So you know, Mr. DJ Pony, if you ever need a new broadcasting station, you've always been welcome to join us in Dusselhoof.
I appreciate the offer, Doctor, but I've gotten quite cozy here. However, we may be in contact because we are looking for off-site interview options. There are a lot more stories out there, and I'm already on thin ice with Ten Pony Management.
Okay, whatever you say. We would be happy to help up however we could. You only need to talk to our head council pony, Tulip. One of the few good things that came from discovering the reality of the experiment was that she was fully vindicated in regards of the Overmare password. You see, it had tortured her for years. Tulip used to spend hours on end trying every conceivable password she could. She'd stay up days and nights until I pulled her away from the terminal screen. If she could, she would have shed tears of joy from finding out that our seemingly eternal sentence in the stable was not her fault. Since then, Tulip has risen to the task originally bestowed on her and led by our new Dusselhoof for over a century. Despite her guilt, she has more strength than all of us. I believe wholeheartedly that without Tulip Blossom, we would have been lost. I would have been lost.
Wait, are you two...
You'd be surprised what kind of circumstances can bring two ponies together.
Now that is exactly what this show needed, a zombie love story.
Oh, and I do love her. Tulip has brought so much life and joy to our otherwise dismal circumstances. It's because of her that my new life has actually been quite wonderful.
That is very touching, Doctor.
Plus, for the sake of total honesty, we were trapped together underground for 100 years. You need to find ways to, pass the time.
Okay.
Being a ghoul can be quite invigorating.
Thank you, Doctor. You're lucky we're broadcasting in safe harbor hours. Not that we have regulators anymore. So, ghouls of the wasteland, if you're looking for some place to call home where people don't just point shotguns at you all the time, Dusselhoof is the scenic ghoul colony for you. Just follow the transcontinental rail line through the Navanstein Mountain Pass and look for the bright green glow. Apparently, it'll improve your dating life as well. And for all the rest of you, respect your fellow pony, whether or not they look like a talking corpse. Not only could you make a great new friend, but you might find yourself with a tough, smart companion that can keep watch at night, not eat your food or drink your water, warn of high radiation zones, and be a great partner to have your back during a fight. In fact, a ghoul sounds like one of the best friends you can have in the wasteland. So, thank you once again for joining us, Dr. Stralung Greenshift.
It was a pleasure, DJ Pony. Know that you will always have royal listeners in Dusselhoof.
Every story must come to an end. I wish I could tell you more. We've had our sadness and we've had our fun, something we can't ignore. And though we may fly to the east and the west, and distance may keep us apart,